Hey, thanks a lot. It's great to be here. I got to really thank Dr. Jenkins. She must have had a lot of vision and foresight to when she invited me to do this about 6 months ago to know how badly I would want to be out of D.C. this week. And so it worked out really good, and so I'm happy to be here. But nonetheless, I do think that you see everything going on in D.C., but for agriculture, I think lots of good things are going on in Washington, D.C. When I was at the Department of Agriculture in Nebraska for 18 years prior to going to my current position in Washington, I don't ever remember a time when state departments of ag or ag commodity groups had the access that they have in the White House and to the White House that they have right now. When you see the president talk about an agricultural issue, there's always a number of farmers around him, and you can usually find in the picture at least one cowboy hat, if not more cowboy hats. And so that's something that I think is President Trump has granted to agriculture, that we haven't seen that direct of access and somebody that talks about farmers the way that the president talks about farmers. And, you know, just some of the few things that are of special interest to you as cattlemen, you know, the White House was very integral in helping USDA get a regulatory foothold in the fake meat or laboratory meat regulation process. And that's something that's a big deal. FDA will have a role, but at the end of the day, USDA will deal with the labeling issues and the issues to get it from the lab onto into the retail stores, and on, and then how consumers decide to accept that based on the labeling is yet to be seen. A few of the things they wanted me to talk about, and I think what it's advertised I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to spend that much time on. But I will touch a little bit on trade, because that's something that's very much of importance to agriculture. We in America produce a lot of food, and we need to be able to get it into the marketplace around the world. But what we've seen over the last few decades is the WTO has evolved, and nations have tried to figure out how to work around some of the agreements that they had made when they entered the World Trade Organization through sanitary restrictions and phytosanitary restrictions, is that we had become a country that let lots of products come into the United States but faced lots of barriers in other countries around the world. And what we're finally seeing now is the U.S. standing up and saying, if we're going to have free trade, we also have to have fair trade. And we've seen some great accomplishments. Korea, we reached a new agreement with Korea that brought about a fairer approach to trade, especially for agriculture. Japan yesterday, I think, voted in their Diet in the first round of voting to approve the Japanese trade agreement that will bring us back to an even playing field on tariffs. And in the red meat industry, that's going to be huge for exports and the driving exports in the future. USMCA is something that needs to be passed. We need Congress to take up the trade agreement with USMCA. Canada and Mexico are our biggest trading partners. It's an agreement that helps out agriculture as much as anybody else, especially certain segments of agriculture. Wheat and dairy are big winners, not necessarily beef, but beef, wheat and dairy are big winners in USMCA, especially on the Canadian side of the border. And it also updates the use of electronic certificates to move back and forth across the border, which is what the trade wants to use and hadn't had a path forward to be able to use them the way we will be able to use that in the future as well, which will help all exports moving back and forth. And finally, China. It seems like China, we get lots of excitement around China, and then we get some few steps backwards. China is a very tough negotiator. And we're very much involved with those discussions, but it is definitely a process of a few steps forward and a few steps back every now and then. We still hope that we're getting close, and I feel that we're getting close. We've made some progress on some key issues. But China creates huge opportunity for us. But I also think we shouldn't recognize the opportunity that we are taking advantage of in China, even with the discussions that are going on with trade. Their experience with African swine fever and the way that that has decimated their hog herd, there's a lot of private estimates that think they may have lost as much as 50% of their hog population in China. That has created a huge protein void for them. And it creates a huge opportunity not only for the pork industry in America, but for the beef industry, the poultry industry, and even soybeans and other proteins that can come in that they like to consume in the processed product like tofu. If you look at China and what 50% of their hog population, the protein that that produces for their consumers' tables, is greater than all the pork that trades in outside in world trade. Not necessarily what's consumed in countries, but what trades between countries, it's greater than everything in the world that trades in the pork industry. So that creates that's where we're creating opportunities for other proteins as well. And we're seeing some record levels of movement of those type of products starting to emerge in China for opportunities, not only just through China, but through Hong Kong and Vietnam as well. Maybe just to take a few steps backward now and just talk a little bit about for those of you Nebraskans, which it's great to come here and see so many friendly faces and familiar faces and get to catch up a little bit with you Nebraskans. You know that as director of ag, I was able to go back home to the farm and ranch almost every weekend. And it gave me a great opportunity to touch base. I don't get that same opportunity in D.C., but when I was director of ag and got to go back on the weekends, I would end up in the co-op or at Tubbs Pub in our small community of Sumner, Nebraska, population 250 people. And what I found out was I was surprised at how attuned they were to what was going on in Lincoln, Nebraska. And they weren't bashful to let me know whether or not what was happening in Lincoln, Nebraska had a positive effect on them or whether or not they thought it had a negative effect. And so it made me go back to Lincoln each week and realize that what happened there affected people across America and across Nebraska in small towns like Sumner, Nebraska, and that we needed to make sure that I was being thinking about that as I made decisions. I can't come back every weekend, like I said, anymore to Nebraska, but I can remember that the decisions we make at USDA affect people's lives in small communities all across America, and remember that it's individual farmers and ranchers, and so I intend to continue to do that. And maybe just as since we're here and this is a convention that's focused on the beef industry, I might just like to share a few thoughts today about maybe what I see as what's going on in the beef industry, what I see as maybe on the horizon for the beef industry, and how those might merge together. And so first of all, I'd like to talk a little bit about what consumers want and what I sense consumers want as I travel around the nation and world. I'd like to talk about what I as a producer and what I hope that you as fellow producers, I hope I'm attuned to what I think you guys want as in the beef industry, and then maybe talk about how we might can merge those two different worlds together as we move forward. And so first of all, and I think that one of the most astounding things as I've had to shop in a grocery store in a city the size of Washington, D.C., is how consumers want to have a story attached to the food they buy. Everywhere in the meat case, when I'm in Washington, D.C., there's people that are trying to differentiate themselves with the story behind the food that is in the meat case or in the vegetable aisle or even in some of the other processed good aisles that are there. And it's using a story that traces it back to a farm, to trying to make that connection to a consumer. And I think that's something that has emerged as very important. The other thing is the conversation that you hear around sustainability, especially when you have all the conversations that are going on in urban areas about climate change and their firm belief that we are experiencing climate change. And so that's shaping how they approach this need to know how their food's produced and their expectation to have it produced in a way that mitigates that fear they have about climate change and mitigates the fears they have about sustainability and whether or not we're doing things on our farms and ranches that are environmentally appropriate. And I'm not saying that they're right in having these perceptions, but what I'm saying is that we need to be aware and think about that they're having these perceptions and think about how that impacts us. The other thing that consumers are very interested in is knowing that their food is safe. And I think that's something that we score way higher on in America than any other country around the world, is that our consumers do believe that we have safe food, but there's times that we chip away at that. And when we have a recall in lettuce, and it takes a year to have FDA complete a traceability and be able to indicate where they think it might have come from, I think that chips away at that confidence in a safe food supply a little bit. I think when we look at some of the stories they hear about antibiotic use and antibiotic resistance. And FDA just came out with a report at the end of last week about that. I think that raises concerns because they don't understand. They don't understand the difference between what we use in livestock and how we use it and what we use as important in human medicine. They're two different types of antibiotics and different products that are used there, but they don't understand that. So that chips away a little bit about at their concern about safe food as well. And so I think that's something else we need to be cognizant of and think about when we think about what consumers want. And finally, I think that there's some different segments of consumers that are willing to spend a lot of money on food, but I think the vast majority of consumers here in America and around the world really want affordable food. They still want us to produce food that they can go to the grocery store and afford and spend a small portion of their disposable income on rather than and then be able to use the rest of their disposable income to have fun. As producers, I think that we have some expectations. We want to be profitable first and foremost. And as we try to be profitable and take our share out of each of the different segment chains and what's left over at the end of the day, I think we've faced some real challenges, especially here in the last few years. And when you look at the weather challenges we had last winter that ate into profitability as well, I think that that's a worry that we have. For by and large, when I go out on the road, I hear farmers and ranchers basically say, leave us alone. Get regulation away from us. Let us run our farms and ranches. Let us do the right thing because we know what the right thing is. And in most cases, I think that's a great argument. We do have multi-generational farms and ranches here that are more productive today than they ever have been. And if that isn't the sustainability story that should carry the day, I don't know what is. But it's also a story that we struggle to figure out how to talk about. We want to be left alone when our operation might smell bad or might have flies. We want to be left out of the nuisance suits that we see as you get closer to more urban areas or towns that are moving outside of their traditional boundaries and reaching into the country. And we don't want to have a big fight with our local zoning committee when we want to expand our livestock operation or add a livestock operation onto our row crop operation to be able to bring a son or daughter home to the farm. And so that's something that producers want. One of the things that I think especially maybe isn't as relevant to the beef industry today as it is to the pork industry, but concerns about animal diseases that exist outside the United States, like African swine fever. We want to make sure that somebody's looking out for us and keeping those pests and diseases that could cause us severe economic harm or damage. We want to make sure that those stay out of the United States. And in a large part, that's one of my main roles at APHIS, is to wake up in the morning and worry about what we're doing from a federal government point of view to be able to assure that we're doing that. And so at the end of the day, I think there's what consumers expect, we have trouble understanding, and what we expect, I think consumers sometimes have trouble understanding. And so how do we look down the road and figure out how we merge those thoughts or those two different important segments? Because without consumers, we don't have a market for our products. And without farmers, they don't have food to eat. And so I think, first of all, one of the things that I have strived to do when I was director of agriculture, as well as now, is listen to consumers and spend some time studying and understanding what they're saying. And maybe what their top line, what they're saying, isn't really what they're saying to us. And I think in some cases, spending some time when you're in an urban area, going into a grocery store and taking a look at, because those grocery stores present products in a lot different ways than the grocery store does here in Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. And so I think that's a great opportunity to get a context of how the market might be changing there and how consumers are, what they're expecting out of you. So do some of your own reconnaissance on that. I think the other thing is we need to think about how we're communicating with consumers. And whether I know that this is a popular topic, you know, is it social media? Is it the messages? We have all the science that we want to give them. But I think consumers, at the end of the day, don't want the heavy message. What we have found that consumers want to know is they want to know that we as farmers share the same values that they have. At the end of the day, we're all worried about our family. We're all worried about providing for our family. And they want to know that we're worried about the things that they're worried about. We're worried about being able to continue our family business. We're worried about being able to make sure that we pass our land on to the next generation in better shape than we got it. And I think that's something that aligns with their values. That's a strong message for us to communicate to them. I think at the end of the day, they want to know that if we lived in the same area and our kids ended up on the same playground, that that our kids and their kids, we would both want them to have the same values in life, the same opportunities, and that we would be the kind of people that they wanted to hang out with. And I think we very much are those kind of people. And then I think finally, as we think about how we market our product, I think we need to start thinking that beef isn't beef isn't beef. And that there are different ways for us to think about how we approach different consumers. There are definitely, we talked about those consumers that want boutique food, that want all kinds of claims attached to their food, and they want that traceability in their food so that they know where it was every step along the way, and they're willing to pay for that. And so do we want to be that producer that caters to that audience? Do we want to align ourselves with the right third-party verifiers to be able to capture that? Yeah, it's going to be more expensive, but there are some big rewards at the end. Do we want to be a producer that just wants to produce the most pounds, and our idea is to be the low-cost producer to end up being able to be the supplier of that affordable beef that people want around the world? And if that's our marketing plan, we arrange our investments in capital and align ourselves with a marketing system that allows us to be efficient within that system. We also know that there's been a big boom in choice and prime beef. And so do we want to be a high-quality producer? Maybe that's a different market segment for us to align ourselves with and be able to target high-end restaurants or the export marketplace and line up with a production system that helps us do that. But I think the days of not figuring out what our endpoint is and not being able to align ourselves with how we get into that endpoint that fits what our goals are for our operation, what our goals are for our family, and what we can feasibly execute in our operation are gone. I think we have to start figuring out how we line up with consumer segments, because we're starting to see more and more consumer segments emerge in the marketplace. Because of consumers' desires, attitudes, needs, and wants. And so I think that lots of opportunities there. Some of them fit my operation at home, some of them don't. And some of them fit your operation better than they would fit mine. And so I think that that's something that coming to conferences like this, you give yourself an opportunity to be exposed to different ideas and start thinking about your path forward, because I think everybody's going to have a different path forward or a unique path forward as we look into the future. Maybe finally, just to end up and close a little bit, I have three children. They're going to be 28 on Friday. They're triplets. And as you know, we lived in a small community, and they graduated in a high school class of 16 students. We learned very early on, because we were also involved in 4-H and FFA, that when you have three kids the same age, they all can't be champion junior beef showmen. They all can't win the speech contest, and they all can't be valedictorian of their class. And that became very obvious, because Emily was obviously had a better chance at that than the boys were going to have. But nonetheless, it made us, and my wife actually gets credit for this philosophy, because it was one that she started espousing early on, especially when it came time to do the 4-H chores, that we were going to work together, we were going to work hard, and we were going to keep in mind that when one of us did well, we all did well. And that we were going to work for that common goal of the family succeeding. And I think that's something that translates into other things as well. And I think it translates into agriculture, and it definitely translates into the beef industry, because we have segments within our industry. We have cow-calf producers. We have feeders. We have packers, and we have other segments in between that flow that help facilitate some of the goods and services that we need to be able to access in the beef industry. And it's easy to pit one of us against the other, or think that one segment is got an advantage or one segment is mistreated. But I think if we all start thinking about how, if one of us wins in the beef industry, we all need to be able to win. We need to conduct our business in a way that, at the end of the day, the beef industry wins. And so that's what I would like to leave you with. I thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. And I think that I can take a few questions.